Thank you for calling the Bombas Comfort Line. Bombas make socks, slippers, tees, and underwear made with the highest quality materials. Press 1 for comfort, 2 for style, 3 for donation.
You chose style. Bombas is styles for whatever you enjoy. You can run in Bombas, lounge in Bombas, dress them up, dress them down, but always give back in Bombas. Because with every item purchased, another is donated. Bombas, comfort worth calling for. Go to bombas.com/audio and use code AUDIO for 20% off your first purchase. That's BOMBAS.com and use code AUDIO.
On the Powers That Be podcast, we examine the players and currents behind today's most consequential decisions. Join us. Listen to the Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, folks, thanks for stopping by. We'll be taking a good gardening stroll shortly, but you can give us a call right now. Alex will answer the phone. He's producing 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120 with your ideas, questions, concerns, or comments. And Mr. Kelly, before you take off, you know how we have had this social distancing when we're in stores and these, you know, things on the floor and stuff?
Mm-hmm.
How come we never have had that social distancing with somebody driving on your rear end? And somebody was on Tracy's rear end a couple days ago.
Yeah.
I mean, they were so close. If we would have had to stop or something, it would have been disastrous. But we have this social distancing one place and not another. It doesn't make sense.
Well, you're supposed to socially distance or vehicular distancing, maybe we should call it. And you know, it used to be a kind of a thing where you would tap the brakes or even just turn on your lights to get them to stop.
Right.
And a friend of mine tragically lost somebody because of a case like that.
Oh, you're kidding.
And so, you know, there are times where you kind of want to do that and it's like, no, you just really don't.
Right.
I mean, you're tempted to show them and to scare them, but it can be a bad thing. I don't understand. It's such an inconsideration that we're seeing so much now. Red lights are like stop signs, maybe.
Yes.
You know, and so there's just a lack of consideration for other people, and that's an example of it. And it's frustrating and it's dangerous.
Yes, it is. I mean, Tracy said, gosh, they're so close. And so I looked over my shoulder. I thought, man, they are. You couldn't even see their headlights.
Yeah.
Because they were, you know, because their trunk was.
Wow, they are right on you then.
You aren't kidding.
Yeah, that's scary stuff.
I don't know if what they're trying to do is make you pull over, or are they trying to, I don't get it.
And it's really frustrating when somebody in front of you is going slow and you can't do anything. It's like, look, buddy, you can ride my butt all the way. It doesn't matter. I can't go anywhere.
Right.
So just a little patience, a little consideration goes a long way.
Exactly.
Well, I'm glad you guys are okay.
Right. Yes, it is Saturday morning, and we're going to get together, and we're going to have a discussion about what's going on in your landscape. And how about your houseplants? How are they doing? And do you need to do anything in your landscape? Can you still do things? Can you plant? Can you do pruning? Can you do it? I saw somebody pruning their hedge yesterday. Let's see, was it yesterday? Might have been yesterday. But anyway, with a hedge trimmer. But anyway. So use the information I'll share with you, and hopefully it'll make you solidify your options. Of course, with that final judgment of what action you're going to take is going to be on your shoulders. And this is your show, and I certainly appreciate you inviting me over. And as I said before, a very important player is Alex. He's producing, and this is going to be the last time Alex is going to be producing the Garden Hotline, because he's moving on to greener pastures. And by the way, I'm Mike Miller. I've hosted the Garden Hotline since 1994. I can come to your home and do a landscape consultation if you like, or if you'd like to give a landscape consultation gift certificate, you can just email me and I can email you the gift certificate back and you can give it to somebody. You can go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com. On the homepage, there's my email address and phone number where I can be reached. Well, let's get moving. Today's stroll is brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. Well, as tradition has it, Saturday, the Saturday that's closest to a seasonal change, and by the way, winter starts next Tuesday, I do a tour de yard. And so I just kind of highlight some of the things that's going on in my landscape, and that's kind of how I do it. So I'll start off on the south side, and that's the narrow area between Pam's house and ours, and it's got a sidewalk. And also the planting there, Lily of the Valley, and it goes along there. And also, really, the Lily of the Valley is very much asleep right now. But most things are, most plant materials. And there's two different types of sedum. There's sedum live forever, and then there's sedum acre. One is more of an upright sedum, and the other one is more of a ground cover type. On the west side, which faces Christie Park, we get to see that panorama of great trees and leaves and everything else, plus the open lawn in between all the trees. And this is on that west side also is the first of our three sugar maples that are street trees. And underneath the sugar maple is sedum acre. And our front lawn is zoysia, and it's pretty good. There's a little bit of wild strawberries in there, but not too much else. But it's certainly tanned by the time of year it is. On the north side, which is both our front and back doors, there's plantings of various types of conifers and broadleaf evergreen shrubs as well. Then some perennials, coral bells, Japanese painted fern. There's ground covers, yellow creeping jenny, sedum acre, and then sweet alyssum, which is a self-seeding annual. I've been growing that for years in there, and it really has certain times a year, obviously not now, but has a nice fragrance. So there's two other sugar maple street trees on that side of the house, too. So anyway, around to the back, which is the east side of the house, there's always a lawn, but it's kind of spiced by a couple different weeds. My experimental area where I just kind of don't use herbicides or anything, and I just kind of watch and see what comes and what goes and everything else. And then on the other side of our garage, which is back there along the alley, is the purple coneflowers. And there I have various holiday decorations, and Tracy did a great job of decorating our screen porch. And she actually got a couple of new different things, a cardinal light and hollies. And that just adds some real nice pizzazz. So it's just the thing, holiday decoration that I thought was going to be spectacular didn't quite turn out as good as I thought it would be. I have a smaller snowman, and I have him on top of a table. And so the snowman's there, and then I have a weeping tree that the branches, it's lighted, obviously, but they kind of drip down. And I thought, if I put the snowman underneath this, it'll look like it's snowing on the snowman. But it doesn't quite do that, but that's okay. You try things, you never know what's going to happen. So anyway, Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, folks, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. At least we're getting some rain. I don't think it's enough, really, to make up the difference because we went through that dry spell. And also, when it rains and when we get this wind, then it dehydrates the water that has fallen. And I haven't really, I mean, I know there's rain because there's puddles and things like that, but it's not enough that's really, you can see the, you know, raindrops coming down. But anyway, enough of that stuff. Let's head over to Jerry's yard. Hi, Jerry.
Mike, appreciate you taking my call.
Sure.
Here's what I'm kind of up against. I had to open up the front yard of my house for a neighbor to connect to a sewer line that was along the road. And so they had to dig across the front of my yard, close to the road, a 10-foot deep trench. And so that was displaced a lot of dirt up into the rest of my front yard. And it actually, all that dirt sat on top of my grass for almost a month. It started just before Thanksgiving. Mm. And so anyway, the dirt's back in the trench now, and it's kind of smoothed out. I'm just curious what you would recommend that I need to have my neighbor and that construction company put on my yard, because I'm kind of concerned, like, regular grass isn't going to grow. I mean, what would you think I need to do?
You mean as far as in the trench?
No, I'm not too much worried about the trench, But the amount of dirt that they had to dig out, it actually went back at least 15 foot into my yard.
Ooh.
They had a big pile of dirt that just sat on top of the existing grass.
Right.
You know, and I'm sure it's dead. And a bulldozer doesn't do a very good job of landscaping, you know, when they're dragging the dirt back. So
very true. Well, probably what I'd do is I'd have, you know, have them come in and do a core aeration of this area wherever they had this piles of dirt. And then I'd put probably about an inch or so of compost on top of that and just let that sit through the wintertime. And what I was going to say is where this trench hole was, too, it's going to be settling. So you're going to have to, that soil's going to have to be improved because the subsoil is now maybe on top, and that's not going to be able to grow grass for you in that space. So that area is going to have some compost brought in, maybe a compost topsoil mix, and then blend it in. But let the settling happen first, because my guess is the trench area is going to drop down probably any place between 2 to 4 inches because of all the air pockets that are a result of the backfill.
Okay. Well taken. Well, there's still a big pile of dirt in my neighbor's yard because the project's moved over to her side. And so anyway, good tips on the compost for the rest of the front yard that was affected.
Right.
I appreciate that.
The core aeration for sure, because the soil got compacted by, you know, the existing lawn soil was compacted by just the weight of the, you know, the pile of dirt that was there.
Right. Okay. So as soon as it dries up a little bit, get it corated and then compost on top.
Exactly.
All right. Hey, thank you for the advice.
Sure. My pleasure.
All right. Thanks. Bye.
Yeah, and 314-436-7900, 1-800-925-1120. Just remember that that's one of the major major things that we have to be concerned with is the compaction of soil, regardless of what, you know, if it's equipment or anything else. Because once it gets so compacted, then whether it was a nice lawn, you know, / soil first, it doesn't really matter. It's just now it's really pressed down, and then to have success, even if you lay sod, let alone put down grass seed, the chances of the sod being able to push its root system down into a compacted soil area is going to be somewhat minimal. And if you do end up doing seed, there's a couple of houses that have had some construction close to us, you know, in the front, and they're putting way too much straw. The straw, I don't understand where that whole concept came from, but it's just a light sprinkling of straw just to kind of hold the moisture. If it gets too thick and deep, then it can make it too humid, and then if any of the seed does start to germinate, then it could actually be killed off by the fungus that's growing in that spot. So just kind of keep that in mind. And this is a perfect time of year to get your soil tested, too. I mean, that's really something that's very, very important to have done. And, I mean, to keep just kind of guessing what kind of fertilizer and stuff, it doesn't work. If you want to really have a successful lawn, and what does a soil test do? The soil test results will tell you the status of the nutrients, phosphorus, potassium, calcium, magnesium, and other things as well. So just know that those things are really the major components of having a successful lawn. And the results, if you take a sample in, will be done in about 10 to 14 days or so, particularly if they're submitted this time of year. And what you need to do is, if you want to have a soil test done from your lawn, just take samples from several different areas in your lawn. And that way, don't take samples out of, let's say, a ground cover area, a vegetable garden area, and a lawn area, and mix them all together. You don't want to do that. The soil test the conditions will have a big, huge effect on the overall health of the plants, regardless of where they are. And there are certain things that, you know, it just knowing your soil pH, then that's how acidic it is or how alkaline it is. That's really important because you could be adding nutrients with a fertilizer or something else that actually is basically counterproductive. So just keep that And over-fertilizing is something that people don't think you can do, but you can over-fertilize, and particularly depending upon what the analysis is. So the testing is one way to tell if you have too much of one thing or not enough of another. And that way you can make those kind of adjustments, because lawns here or just gardening in general is very difficult, as you well know. Well, let's head over to Linda's yard now. Hi, Linda.
Hi, good morning, Mike. Merry Christmas.
Same to you.
Hey, at least you made an effort to do that decoration out on your screen porch. So some people aren't even making an effort this year. So congratulations on whatever way it turned out. Can you help me with a question on orchids? Do you know?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I have to. The leaves are very healthy. They put out new leaves. And I'm feeding with an orchid food. And I get a little bloom stalk coming up, and it gets to a certain point, and then it just completely stops growing. I'm using Better Grow Orchid Plus, you know, in their water that I water them once a week. What am I doing wrong? They're in a sunny window.
Okay.
South.
What type of orchid is it? Is it Phalaenopsis? Is it a Cattleya? Do you know which kind it is?
I really don't know. It's just kind of, I don't know. It's just, the leaves are pretty large. Like, about, I would describe them looking like bananas on the one. The other one's a little bit different.
Well, so,
but,
yeah.
You know, ones that I purchased, like one was from Sam's and I think the other from Schnook. So
right.
I don't really know.
So, well, anyway, some of the orchids, some of the varieties just don't do well in certain, you know, in house circumstances. So they can, I mean, when they're in a greenhouse or something like that, they'll do fine. But once you bring them home, they don't acclimate really well. And that may be the problem as much as anything, because it sounds like you're doing everything, you know, as much as possible. And I'm assuming it's a variety that grows in bark and not in potting mix.
Yes, they're in bark.
Okay, so what this is just a situation with this particular variety of whatever type it is, just doesn't like, you know, being indoors to be able to flower, because flowering takes a lot of stress. If it pushes out a growth that you think is going to be the flower, you know, maybe it's not. Maybe it's just a, you know, an aerial root system, because any of them that grow in the bark are ones that in their native habitat are growing on the sides of trees and things like that. So my guess is
okay.
It's just, you know, I would probably go to the Missouri Botanical Garden, or the best thing to do would be to go to the Botanical Garden website, mobot.org, and check out and find out when the Orchid Society meets, because they meet there at the Botanical Garden. And if you're really interested in this, I would attend a couple meetings there. And those people, you know, they'll ask you which variety, take a picture with your phone or whatever, and then that way they can know specifically which it is, and you can find out exactly what's going on.
Okay. It's kind of funny. I'm in the Oakville Garden Club. In fact, I'm going to be the president for the next 2 years, so that would be interesting. But we had a speaker from the Missouri Botanical Garden here. It was at my home. Oh, it was prior to COVID, so a couple of years ago. And she was kind of in charge of she was talking about 400 orchids that they had there, you know, that she was in charge of.
Mm.
Well, you know, I listened, but I didn't pay that much attention because I wasn't interested in orchids back then, but
right.
Now I am. And so that's a good suggestion.
Yeah. Cause I mean, they're tough. I mean, I, you know, I've grown orchids a lot over the years and everything else, but the only one that I really like is the Phalaenopsis. It's, I mean, they're really good as far as reblooming every year, and I've got, I think, two or three, and I mean, I've got one that's in flower right now, and so they're really pretty easy to care for.
Can you spell that for
me? No, I really can't. I mean, not.
I'll look it up.
Yeah,
it's like
Phalaenopsis, right?
Okay. All right. I'll look up varieties of orchids. And maybe, like, where would be a good place to get one, do you think?
I mean, you could go to the, you know, I mean, the flower, I mean, the you could wait until the orchid show is happening at the Botanical Garden, then you could just get it there. Or, I mean, there's other places you can get them, and they're generally pretty healthy. But that would be probably the ideal place to get it.
Okay, that sounds good. Thank you for your help, and Merry Christmas.
Sure, same to you. Merry Christmas to you. And why don't we go ahead and take a break? Mike Miller, KMYX Garden Hotline, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, folks, we got some phone lines open, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Let's head over to Chuck's yard now. Hi, Chuck.
Good morning, Mike. I've got two unrelated questions. The first is, in the spring, late spring, I planted a small arborvitae. It was a 3-gallon pot. The variety was a Goldie arborvitae, the kind with the yellow leaves. Anyway, what happened was, shortly after I planted it, we had a period of very dry weather and windy conditions, and I would say probably half of the plant died. And I cut out the dead wood, but about half of the plant is still viable. And I'm wondering, will that grow into anything worth seeing if I just let it go, or should I just cash it in and get a new one this next spring?
Yeah, first of all, the golden ones are not really all that great for here, just in general. And if it's already lost half of its, you know, let's say needles, even though they're not technically needles, but aesthetically, it's not going to look good.
Okay. So it's not just the needles, it's the whole limbs. It's the whole stalk.
Right, exactly, right.
Stems that have died, and actually they fell off. I didn't even cut them off. They fell off. So,
really?
Okay, well, yeah. So, I let it go all summer thinking, well, maybe it'll come back, and it never did. And then finally all the dead limbs almost just fell on the ground. So,
yeah.
All right, well, I'll do something else in the spring then. But the Goldies are not great for this area then.
No, and just in general, once with the arborvitae, once an area dies off for whatever reason, whether it's, you know, dogs urinating on them or weather-wise or anything else, those spots just never infill.
Okay. Okay, great. Thank you. Listen, my second question has to do with clover, and over the years I've heard you say over and over again that it's very difficult to kill off clover. And I've tried myself, and I agree with that. So my question is, I actually was doing research on this, and I learned that back in until the 50s or 60s, grass seed companies were actually blending in clover seed into their mixes, which I thought was odd because we consider it a weed now. But
right.
Should I just quit fighting the battle and just enjoy the clover and let the rabbits have their meals in the spring? I mean, it's a pretty large area. It's probably 30% of my lawn right now.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that, because the nice thing about clover is it, you know, pulls nitrogen out of the air and then puts it down into the root system. And so ultimately it's going to kind of penetrate out from the root system and enrich the soil, but that doesn't really help anything because it's only clover that's right there. So consequently, the clover will just be healthier. But yeah,
okay.
Many times over the years, I've recommended people getting Dutch white clover. And, you know, for very difficult areas to grow lawn, and embrace the clover, because it's only, you know, it flowers. It's only going to get, you know, a certain amount of inches high. It's not going to be problematic. You know, it is invasive. There's no getting around it. But, yeah, I would say if you don't mind it, go for it.
Okay. Well, it's just I've tried so many times to get rid of it, and I kill it off, and I plant grass seed in the fall, and
right.
The next year it just comes back as strong, and it's just a never-ending battle, apparently.
Right, exactly.
Okay, well, I appreciate it. Thank you for your advice.
Sure, my pleasure. And let's see, now where should we go? Let's go over to Tom's yard. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Merry Christmas, Mike.
Same to you.
Hey, listen, I'm the guy that called last week. I got that hibiscus. I brought it in the house, and I thought I was overwatering it. All the leaves fell, but that wasn't the case. We looked at it in the bright sunlight, and we've seen webs on the tips of the branches on a few of them. Spider mites infested this thing.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. It's bald right now. There's no leaves anywhere. But what I did was I had this fungicide stuff, and I shook it real, real well. It's like an insecticidal soap. And I put it in a little spray bottle, you know, I think a half ounce or whatever for 32-ounce bottle, whatever. And I sprayed it two different times. I have to bring it out on the deck to do it, and I really doused it two different times, and the soil also. And I'm seeing growth coming back on the ends of the tips of the leaves now. You know, it's like I got some vegetation sprouting out, you know. But the directions on this fungicide stuff, it doesn't, it's not really clear how often to do it.
Well, generally, if it's insecticidal soap, then it's not a fungicide. That strictly goes after insects. But for the most part, with spider mites, you almost have to have a specific type of insecticide, you know, a miticide versus a regular general insecticide. Oh. So just understand that that's going to be the case. And if you really did have spider mites, best way to do is if you think you have spider mites, not just with looking at the little webbing and things, is to put a piece of white paper underneath the branches and shake it. And if you do have spider mites, then you're going to see some like really small red dots, flicks. And that's what the spider mites really are.
Okay. Well, this I don't have no leaves on now. It's bare. but the instructions, I mean, this fungicide stuff I use says it does kill spider mites.
Really?
So, yeah.
All right.
So I don't see any more webs on it. So I'm wondering how often, if you think two days in a row would have wiped them out, or it think I need to do it more?
Well, if you don't have any foliage in there, the spider mites have dissipated. You've killed them. But if there's no leaves, then there's nothing to spray. No reason to spray the stems because they can't live on stems or branches or anything like that. They have to live on leaves or intersection of leaves.
Okay. All right. So I'll just wait and see what happens. There ain't no sense in pulling it out and hosing down the roots and then replanting it in the pot, you think?
No, not really.
Okay. All right. All right. Well, hey, Merry Christmas to you, and thanks for your information.
Sure. My pleasure. Yeah, I admire your tenacity there to go after those. But, spider mites are, they're really kind of, a difficult thing. And they're really, small webs, really tiny webs. So you did a good job finding out what it was. Let's head over to Holly's now. Hi, Holly.
Hi, Mike. Couple of questions here. My daughter gave me an amaryllis about 4 weeks ago.
Ah.
And I thought I read the directions, and mine has just a little tiny green growth on the top of it. Am I overwatering it, underwatering it? Hers is about 6 or 7 inches tall right now.
Well, it's, basically, so you planted the bulb in the potting mix that it came with it.
And that is correct.
And you watered. So it's just a matter of time. More so than anything
else.
I'm
getting a little bit anxious. Okay. All right. Second question is, I've got a lot of hollies around my yard, and some of my girls have a bright red berry, and some of the girls have a dark maroon berry. Am I looking at something that's going on with the ones that have the dark maroon?
No, just basically it could be variety-wise. Do you think they're the same variety?
Yes, they are.
Right. Well, why there's a different color, it could be a little bit of the nutrients in the soil, but more than likely it's, as long as the foliage is healthy and everything's healthy, the color of the berries, could be exposure, it could be several different things, but I wouldn't be overly concerned with it.
Okay. And the last thing is, I put down compost in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
Should I be putting it down in the fall, too?
It certainly wouldn't hurt. You mean you did like a core aeration, or you just spread it across the...
I just spread it. Yeah.
It wouldn't hurt to do it twice a year, so...
Oh, okay. And then the hollies, I usually just give them holly tone in the spring. Should I be doing those twice a year also?
No. I would say read the label, but generally with the hollies, I kind of like to fertilize them, maybe 2 or 3 months in a row starting in the early spring.
Oh, okay. That's a little bit different from what the directions say.
Right. Read the label and follow that label. I don't use holly tone. I just, for those type of, plants, I recommend just using a fertilizer for acid-loving plants, broadleaf evergreens.
Okay, because I put pine bark mulch down, too.
That's fine. That's perfect.
So I guess maybe I'm not overdoing it, right?
No.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much, and have a Merry Christmas.
Well, same to you.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye. And why don't we go ahead and take a break? 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, folks, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Remember, whether you're growing orchids or any other kind of houseplants, make sure that wherever you place your houseplants, that you're not putting them where the heat of your furnace is going to blow down on it, because that's going to cause some real problems, especially with anything with, you know, let's say smaller or lighter textured leaves. You can start getting some leaf dropping as a result of that. And when you're watering your houseplants, make sure you water with the temperature, water, you know, more or less at room temperature. So you don't have to, you know, I read something the other day that said, you know, pour, get your water in a pitcher and then let it sit overnight. No, just, you know, make the water so it's warm and not just really cold, because cold water can cause some damage to the root system. Let's head now to Suzanne's yard. Hi, Suzanne.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How you doing today?
Very good.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. Have you been a nice person this year?
Well, it all depends on who you ask.
Okay, I'm sure you haven't been naughty. I was wondering about trees. Do you know what type of trees would be the best for the St. Louis area? And I've read somewhere that some trees can, it's amazing, can live over 1,000 years. 1,000 years?
Well, not here, let's put it that way. And I don't know if any tree any place can live 1,000 years.
What are those trees in California?
The sequoias and things like that, they're very long-lived, but they can't live here.
Oh, yes, yes. I was just wondering, like, in general, the trees that I guess, yeah, they couldn't live here because of the environmental factor.
Right, exactly.
But we do have some very good trees. I know that, is it the pine oak that has suffered from some type of a disease or something?
Yeah, any of the red oak group has problems, just kind of in general. So it is pin oaks and all the red oak group, which those are the ones that leaves have, you know, their foliage is pointed, where the white oak, they're cousins to each other, their leaves are roundish on the edges. They don't have any of the same problems that the red oaks do.
Oh, so the pine oak is a better tree than the red oak?
No. The pin oak is a red oak. So that has problems. So it's not pine oak, it's pin, P-I-N.
Pin oak.
Right.
Okay. So I was just thinking, because I looked on the internet, some oak trees, and there's a magenta oak.
I would, you know, that's, again, I would say stay with just the ones that are, you know, go to the Missouri Botanical Garden and look at their website on the ones that are native to here. But I would, if you want an oak, they're very, very slow growing, so you're not going to have an impact for a real long period of time from it. Even if you buy a larger one and spend a lot of money, it's going to take multiple years to get itself acclimated to start doing some growth. But if you're really interested in the oaks, I would say look at the white oak group.
The white oak. Goodness. What are the native trees to Missouri?
Well, basically the white oaks are native to Missouri. There's all kinds of maple trees. There's bald cypress. There's lots of different native trees. There's flowering trees as well.
Huh. I was thinking about something along the they call it the Greenway or the Park, the Parkway Green. Well, anyway, it's between the sidewalk and the curb. What type of trees would be the best there?
Well, it all depends. You know what? You know, it's a very narrow space, so the root system. I don't know where you live, but if you've got sidewalks there, you can walk through the city and you can find out where certain trees, you know, have gotten so large it's really disrupted the sidewalk. It's lifted it up and done all kinds of problems like that. So along the street, I'd be kind of careful or cautious about what kind of tree I'd use there. Now, so, with so me, I have the sugar maples. They're not doing too bad, but there's probably their caliper size, their trunk size is only about probably 8 inches or so, maybe 8 or 9 inches.
Would the sycamore do good along an area like that?
Well, they get pretty big. I mean, the
oh, that's wonderful.
So
then we'll have more clean air. And the leaves. Oh, trees are so beautiful, and they have provide shade, and because the summers had gotten hotter and warmer,
right.
And so the trees would provide shade.
Right, it sure does.
That's what was so beautiful about it all. And then we have the wonderful little squirrels that hop around and chase each other up the trees, and they're just beautiful.
Right. They sure are. I mean, basically a sycamore will ultimately get big enough that it can disrupt the sidewalk. But we live right across the street from Christie Park, and there's all kinds of street trees on the park side that are sycamores. So just realize that they're not like sweet gum balls, but they do produce a seed that drops in. It's a ball, but it's not like a sweet gum ball.
Hmm. See, we have an oak tree that's outside our house. It's over 60 years old.
Right.
And it has a little bit of problems. Not, something major. But I'd like to get another little tree started near it so that, we'll continue to have a tree there.
Well,
to provide shade. And the oak tree, it has the acorns and the squirrels and the birds. Man, it's just wonderful.
Right. I mean, they produce the acorns for sure. And so that's nice that you don't mind the squirrels, because some people don't like the squirrels because they'll jump from the tree onto the roofs and do other problems. But in essence, just watch out where you're going to be planting a new tree, that you don't plant it underneath the drip line of this existing oak tree, because that's where a lot of the competition from the existing tree's root system is going to make it difficult for a new tree to get established.
Oh, I understand. Thank you. That's very smart. I didn't think about that.
Right.
I'm wondering if the tree along the curb area between the sidewalk and the curb, if it had more earth along there for the root system, then it wouldn't disrupt the sidewalk. Is that right?
Well, I mean, it just depends upon how wide the space is. But ultimately, a lot of the trees are going to get big enough that the root system is going to kind of disrupt it. And as far as, it's a street tree, too, realize that I don't know if you have street sweepers or if you have trucks going up and down the street or things like that. If the first few years is going to do some major damage to all the branching and everything else, it's going to break stuff off. So just keep that in mind with this whole process.
Yeah, I don't want anything to damage a tree.
Right.
In fact, in the city, you can be fined if you damage a tree.
Hmm.
Because that's city property. A tree is city property.
Right.
They took the time to purchase them and to plant them. And actually, the residents are supposed to water those trees.
Right.
The city tree. See, that area there between the sidewalk and the curb, that is that's like that's still city property.
Right. Well, Suzanne, we got to run. So thank you for your comments and everything else.
Oh, I'm sorry, sir.
See ya.
Yeah, we're supposed to.
Now, at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, folks, I'll be giving the tip of the trowel shortly, but right now you can give a call 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120 with your ideas, questions, concerns, or comments. And Mr. Kelly,
yes,
how's your new car?
Oh, it's wonderful.
Is it?
It is so cool. Yeah. So we bought just for those of you who don't know, we got a Tesla, and it's a Model 3, which is kind of the smaller sedan vehicle, and it's a lot of fun. It's like driving a spaceship.
Really? So you actually have to drive it? I thought you could just sit there.
You can.
Really?
Yeah. I've done it a little bit on the self-driving, but you always, you know, you have to have your hand on the wheel, and it will tell you to turn the wheel just a little bit to let it know that you're paying attention. Because actually, if you don't pay attention, at some point, it will pull over and stop.
Oh, you're kidding.
No, you have to have your hand on the wheel and have to move it enough to let it know that you're still there, you know. And so I'm not, it takes a while to get comfortable with all that technology stuff. But it's really neat. And it's just so smooth and quiet. And it picks up speed like that.
You're kidding.
Oh, yeah. You hit the gas and the accelerator. There's no gas pedal. It's an accelerator. And you don't have to use the brake most of the time because it has what they call regenerative braking.
So it has a sensor in front?
Well, no. It has that, but it also has, it's like a golf cart. You know, when you take your foot off the gas, it slows down automatically.
Sure.
That's what it does. So I can drive to work without moving my foot, without taking it off the accelerator.
You're kidding.
Yeah. It's really, really neat. Yeah. It's the future of driving, and it's pretty cool.
All right. So you're way ahead of the crowd.
Well, I'm apparently it's one of the fastest selling cars in the country, Tesla.
Kidding.
Yeah, they're selling a lot of them. So we're in there. We're one of the leaders of the pack, I guess. It's really neat. It's a lot of fun.
Well, that sounds great.
Yeah.
Good to hear.
Thank you.
Yes, folks. Oh, by the way, thanks for having me on your show. And we can discuss plant selection, caring for, ups and downs, and all arounds for annuals. There are still plenty of pansies that still look pretty good. So your bulbs, hopefully you got all your spring flowering bulbs planted. But if you haven't, you still got an opportunity because the ground is not frozen to get them into the ground. Your ground covers, hopefully if they're underneath trees, that you're not going to let the leaves just build up to the point where it's going to be so deep, it's going to create a humidity problem and a fungus problem for your ground covers, your lawn, your perennials, roses, trees, shrubs, vines, and water gardens. I'll share my thoughts, but please remember my answers, comments, and opinions is not the only garden path to take towards success, but strictly offered for you to consider. Across the big board is Alex. He's producing. This is going to be his last time that he produces a garden hotline. He's moving on to greener pastures. So anyway, he's able to move on to greener pastures because he did the garden hotline, so he knows about greener pastures. Anyway, during the week, I spend my time doing landscape consulting and on weekends, too. And it's a walk and talk. If you'd like for me to come to your home and do a walk and talk, you can go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com, and that's my email address and phone number on the homepage. If you'd like to give a walk and talk as a holiday gifts to somebody, you can just email me and I'll email a gift certificate back to you. And I'll come and share 40 plus years of experience in the home's landscape design, plants, cares, and maintenance. Tip of the Trial is brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. And it's a special recognition for individual, group, or situation that's made an impression on me. And it's brought to you by St. Louis Composting, as I said before. Tip of the Trial goes out this past week, which I started going to this location when I worked at the Botanical Garden in the 70s. And Tracy and I have been going there since the holiday season for years. This is Missouri Baking Company. It's on the hill. Oh, man, oh, man. The staff there is just, they're great. It's always, particularly this time of year, it's always so packed. And they're so patient, and you know everybody wants, well, we want some spring leaves, we want this, we want that, we want these kind of cookies, and all these other things. So a tip of the trial goes out to all the staff members at Missouri Baking Company. They're on the hill. Also, a tip of the trial goes out to the Green Center. They're located in University City, but they have the Winter Nature Play schedule. And these are one-hour classes for kids between basically 4 years old to 10. And starting on Tuesday, January 11th, it's a naturalist. And fall becomes a naturalist, uncovering the secrets of the winter season and develop skills to help them and help you explore the outdoors. So they've got classes all the way through March. And they are between 4 and 5 every day, or not every day, but every day they have the classes. And so if you're interested in having your kids, again, between the ages of 4 and 10 years old, to take some of the classes here at the Green Center, you can call Kathleen at 314-725-8314, extension 105, or you can just go to the classes at thegreencenter.org. So it's a not-for-profit organization, but they've got some really neat ones. The last one, which is March 11th, Hunt for Hot Cocoa. So can you imagine? Great just stuff. I mean, you can't beat that. So why don't we take a call before we take a break? Let's go to Marion. Hi, Marion. How are you?
Thank you for taking my call,
sure.
Mike. I know you've answered a call for an amaryllis, but my experience is this is my first amaryllis. I summered it over in the garage, and about a month ago, I brought it into my breakfast area, which is a southwest exposure, and I have 3 leaves that are like 15 inches tall, and 1 leaf that is about, excuse me, about 3 inches. I'm wondering, will these flower, or are they just going to keep growing tall?
Well, the leaves are not the flower. Usually what happens is the flower spike comes up, and then after it finishes flowering, or as it's flowering, the leaves start growing out. So apparently how you overwintered it or oversummered it or whatever wasn't quite exactly right.
Okay, I wondered, because I couldn't see any beginnings of a flower.
Right.
So this is just going to be green for me this year.
Exactly. So is this the second year you've had it?
Yes, I received it last year.
Okay, so last year, after a flower, did it put out foliage?
Yes, because I trimmed it to within an inch of the bulb.
And then just let the, and then didn't dry, I mean, just let the bulb sit. You don't do any watering or anything else at all?
No, kind of, I put it out in the garage.
Yeah, in the dark.
Yes.
Well, I mean, you're doing kind of everything right, so why it's not putting out a flower spike, you know, I'm not sure. But generally, once they start flowering, their ability to produce a flower is kind of minimal. I mean, once they start leafing out, the ability to produce a flower is, you know, minimal.
I thought that might be the situation. Well, I'm enjoying the growth of the green stems.
Yeah, but, there's nothing wrong with great, nice-looking leaves, because they does, you know, I mean, they do have nice leaves.
Yes, they do, and it loves the sun where it is.
Right.
So, well, thank you, and I think I'll purchase a new one this year, and we'll try it again.
Right. Good luck.
Thank you, Mike. Merry Christmas.
Sure. Merry Christmas to you. Mike Miller, KMOS Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. In my backyard, where I, you know, encourage, or I just allow the weeds to grow so I can kind of keep track of what's going on, really what I'm seeing more so than anything else is chickweed. And that's one of the cool season annual weeds, which actually germinated last August. It's looking, you know, it looks fine. I do pull it, you know, sometimes, but I just kind of watch and see what's going to be coming up, you know, soon. And just kind of keep track of it. But let's head over to Jim's yard now. Hi, Jim.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
We tilled up a couple areas here at the house, and we plan to put a couple inches of compost on it and then retill it and plant our perennial wildflowers in early February. Is that reasonable? We don't want it to warm up and cause germination.
So you're growing the wildflowers from seed?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, you probably should. I mean, that sounds just right. So, I mean, it's going to be weather dependent, obviously. But, yeah, what you're doing with this, you know, adding the compost to the soil and everything else and then, you know, spreading the seed, that's what you should be doing.
And is February okay?
Yeah. I mean, you could actually, if you were going to try to start them inside, you could actually do it, you know, even earlier than that. But to start them outside, yeah. Because, I mean, natural wildflowers, they've dropped the seed in the fall, depending upon the variety, of course. And then those seeds just lay there on the ground, and that's, you know, that's kind of what nature does.
Okay, should we cover the seeds when we throw them on the ground with a little compost?
You could probably do that, but you, it's probably not necessary. If you just water them in, that should be adequate.
Okay. Thank you very much, and have a Merry Christmas.
Yes, same to you.
All right.
And thanks for calling. And 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. We've got some phone lines open. Let's head over to Joseph's yard. Hi, Joseph. Hey, Joseph, are you there? Joseph. Yoo-hoo.
Oh. Hello.
Hi.
Mike?
Yes.
I'm sorry to bother. Let's see. I have a zoysia in my backyard, but it seems like on the outside edges I'm getting a rust.
On just
it's just the grass is just going to a rust, big chunks of it.
Hmm. I would probably. I mean, it sounds like you have a fungus problem, but how are you watering it and everything?
Well, I'm just letting it go natural. It's such a beautiful backyard.
Well, probably what I do is as soon as I would not do it now, but as soon as it starts greening up in the springtime, dig up about a 6-inch square of the transition where you're seeing the rust, you know, the fungus or whatever, and where it's green, and then take it to your favorite garden center and have them take a look at it.
Oh, okay.
And that way you're going to, you know, find out exactly what's going on there and what you need to do.
You wouldn't recommend just going out there and just cutting it out right now? Just taking the chunks out?
You could do that if you wanted to, but I don't know if it's going to make much difference, because sometimes when we, let's say, drive a tool down into an area that has a fungus, be it a spade or whatever, and then we put it in another spot, we could be spreading that even more. So I would probably, you could do it, but I don't know if it's going to be to the advantage of your zoysia overall.
Okay. Okay, thanks. Thanks, Mike. Merry Christmas to you.
Sure, same to you. And,
thanks, buddy.
Yep. And, if you can go out and, dig it up, but if you're going to dig it up, just make sure what's going to happen is the spots that you're digging it up are just going to be sort of like mud spots, and it may not get rid of the problem. The problem may, so if you want to do that, you certainly can. So 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Things that you need to be doing in your landscape, just kind of in general. This is a good time of year, especially with all the leaves have pretty much fallen now. If you start to see some leaves accumulating in one part of your landscape, go out there and check it out. It may be a low spot. So in other words, the leaves are blowing, and then they catch in the low spot, and the wind blows over the top of them, and they stay there. So just keep that in mind. And those are the spots where you want to make some improvements to the soil in that area. So you want to elevate it. So this is a good time of year to do that. And low spots is certainly in a situation with the difficulty we have, regardless of what type of lawn you're trying to grow, whether it's a fescue, bluegrass, or zoysia, where it's low and moist, fungus problems, are just, let's say, a real disaster, a real heartache. If you do grow strawberries, this is a time of year that you want to just loosely throw some straw over the plant material. Not enough where you can see or where you can't see the strawberries, but just over, loosely over the top of the plant material. And what that's doing is protecting the crowns of the strawberries. So that's where the actually root system and the foliage work meet. And so just periodically check it to see if the straw has blown or if you need to do a little bit more, but that's one thing you can do for that. Also check any kind of chemicals, garden chemicals, or anything that you have that it's, let's say, granular type, make sure that for the wintertime they're not sitting on the garage floor, because a lot of times the floor, with just the moisture and everything else that can accumulate, can penetrate up through the bag and cause some problems with your, let's say, your granular type chemicals, fertilizer or insecticides or anything else. And also, if you've got a liquid one, put it up on the shelf as well and to keep it from freezing, and make sure that you're being conscious of the fact that, you know, if you've got pets and you've got children, that you're putting all this stuff away from, you know, where the kids or the pets can be fooling around with this kind of stuff. And if you've got any kind of leftover seed that you've collected yourself, like zinnia seeds or other kinds of seeds from your landscape, or just packs of seeds, just keep them dry. Don't store them in the freezer. I mean, they say you can store them in a refrigerator, but to me, that just seems a little bit nuts. Our refrigerator doesn't have that much room, let's put it that way. But if you just put them in, and keep them dry and in a cool location, that's, you know, that's fine. This is a time to get out there with all the, you know, debris from all the plant material through the entire growing season, whether that was annuals, whether it was vegetables, whether it was other things, perennials. As long as they weren't fall bloomers, then cut all the debris off, because that, you know, is a situation where you could have you could have diseases or insects or things like that. The other day I was going underneath a Mugo pine that we have, and I saw some squirrely stuff or squiggly looking stuff. And what I did is I picked up several leaves that were underneath the Mugo pine, so they had just blown in. And there was a couple slugs that were there. So just that's, you know, getting rid of those kind of problems is what it's really going to do. Again, your house plants, just make sure that you use the water that's at room temperature. And if you're trying to grow the flowering, you know, the Christmas cactus or the Thanksgiving cactus, they like cooler temperatures. So keep them away from anything that could generate any kind of heat, like a vent from the furnace, or even like, you know, utilities or anything that might generate heat. Keep those cactus away from that kind of circumstance, because they like to have it cool to be able to, you know, do the best they possibly can. And mulch your perennials. Yes, the ground is not even frozen yet at all, so you still have got an opportunity to mulch, but just only 1 to 2 inches, maybe 3 at the most around your perennials. I prefer 2, but just watch out for that just in general. And remember, since the ground is not frozen, also the earthworms are still active. What that means is if the earthworms are active, and you moles are going to be active too, because how moles find the earthworms is they hit, and that's their main source of food, not, you know, grubs or anything else. They hear the earthworms crawling through the ground, and that's what they tunnel towards. So, and using the mole traps is the best thing you can possibly do. So, and this time of year, just watch out about it, fertilizing anything at all. Just really be conscious and cautious about putting any kind of fertilizer on, because you may force some growth depending. We don't know, or I don't know, what the weather's going to be like. So if you fertilize, what it could do, it would be absorbed up by the plant material, regardless of what type it is, and it could, you know, force, let's say, premature growth, whether it be, you know, leaf buds, flower buds, or any kind of growth whatsoever, you know, encouraging that. And that's what you don't want to have happen as winter starts on Tuesday. So winter is, in theory, you know, going to be starting on Tuesday. And also, it's a good time to go down. It's probably if you did dig up your summer bulbs, your cannas and your gladiolas and things along that line, and you stored them up in a, you know, in the basement or wherever. I always dig up my stuff and put them down in the basement. Just check the bags to make sure that they're still firm and everything looks really good with that. So 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. We've got phone lines open, so if you have any questions or concerns, give us a call. Back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, folks, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. We had a couple calls today already about amaryllis, but there's, you know, some other bulbs not quite as spectacular as the amaryllis, because, I mean, those flowers are huge and everything else, but something that's very easy to grow, and when it finishes flowering, you just throw the bulb away. You can't do anything to bring them back again. You can grow them in water. you know, not, I guess they could actually float in a glass of water, but water with, you know, gravel and things like that, paper white narcissus. So those are, I mean, yeah, and they'll take off pretty darn quick. So I'm not saying that if you've got some bulbs and started to grow them, they're going to be blooming by Christmas. No. But maybe probably early in January they'll be in flower. So, and they're really, I mean, pure white, very nice. Let's head over now to Rita's yard. Hi, Rita.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I have green moss growing in my yard. I have about a half acre yard. And there's also green moss growing on two of my oak trees. I have partial sun, and I've used Scott X to try to get rid of it, especially along the stone wall. But it keeps coming back. And
right.
Do you have any ideas?
There's nothing you can do about it, to be honest. I mean, realistically, growing up the trunk, the trees could care less. That's like some of the lichens and other things that grow on trunks and branches. And in your lawn, the soil is just right. And to change the soil chemistry enough so you wouldn't have any moss is not going to happen.
Oh, okay. So trying to dig it up or put some chemical on it won't hurt and won't work.
No, it really won't. I mean, you'll be expending a whole lot of energy, mental and, you know, physical. And the end result is there's still going to be, you may, let's say, reduce it, but it's still going to, you know, have a tendency to come back. Maybe not quite as bad, but it's going to happen. I mean, I have some green moss growing in some cracks in my driveway, and I'm just out fooling around with it. I've tried to get rid of it a couple times, even in that circumstance, just, you know, for my own educational circumstance situation, and it comes back.
Guess I'll learn to like it, huh?
Right, exactly. Embrace it.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you. And 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Things to remember. If you have dogs in your landscape and where the dogs go and you're having a hard time growing, let's say, some of the shrubs, the lower part of the branches where the dogs urinate, or in the lawn area, it's not necessarily because the urine is high alkaline, but high nitrogen content. And that's what it is. It's burning the plant material. So the best, you know, just realize that. I've seen a lot of people have not cut their ornamental grasses back yet. If you don't, they're going to be all over the place in another couple of weeks. So just get some bungee cords, go out there, depending upon what type of variety of the ornamental grass that you have. And some of the bigger ones you want to cut down to about, 12 to 15 inches. Some of the smaller ones down to 4 or 6 inches. But the bungee cord just makes it so when you start cutting, they'll all kind of fall over together. So if it's the smaller grasses, you really don't need the bungee cords. But like with the miscanthus and pampas grass and things like that. And another thing that you can do is to bring in, let's say you want to have some color, and that's probably like 3 weeks or so after you do this. If you have, let's say, spring blooming shrubs, like forsythia, spireas, or something along that line, you can just cut some branches off, bring them inside, put them in water, and you'll be surprised. In a couple of weeks, they're going to be in bloom. So that's another thing you can do. You still have an opportunity to do some transplanting. If you want to move some, let's say, some of your perennials, or you want to move some of the ground cover from one space to another because it's a little thin in one spot, you can still do that, or you can go to the garden centers. Some of the garden centers are no longer carrying plant material like that, but some of them may have it, and you can still plant. And even if it gets really, you know, kind of cold quickly, the ground is still not frozen. So it's still warm enough that you're going to be able to encourage some root system growth. So that's, you know, something that you can really do. Hedges, watch out about being pruning. Any kind of, hedge this time of year. As I said in the first hour, there was somebody that we were driving past their house, and he was pruning he had boxwood. And he was pruning the boxwood, you know, basically last week. I think it was on Thursday or so. But when you start cutting things, that are, you know, broadleaf evergreens like that, or even like yew hedges or something, where you cut the tips off, those tips have been really acclimated more towards the weather, the bad aspects of the weather. So consequently, now you're exposing some of the, you know, needles that have been protected by the, you know, the areas that you've cut off. And so if we do have a really severe cold snap, it could do some really bad damage to that. If you do have roses, grandiflora, floribundas, and those type of roses, you still haven't mulched them, well, you should put some mulch over it. So where that graft is, over the top of that graft, you want about 6 or 8 inches of mulch over the top of that. And you can cut the canes off to about 15 or 18 inches. And that's, you know, there's not a problem doing that whatsoever. So let's see. If you have ground covers, this is one of the things I may do after the show today. Is I've got ground covers, as I told you, some sedum, some creeping jennies and things like that, and sweet alyssum. I'm going to set my mower high in the areas where they're growing. I'm going to just mow over the top of it because we've got some leaves piled up on top of that. So the leaves, I've got a mulching mower. The leaves are going to be chopped up, and then they're going to fall right back down into the ground and just kind of protect the the ground covers just in general. But when it gets so piled up and deep, then that's where it's real trouble. So underneath the Mugo pine, it's a heartache. I can't figure out exactly how the wind whips it up the street and then it bends and turns. And it's like probably like 6 or 8 inches of mulch, not mulch, but 6 or 8 inches of leaves, of oak leaves, have blown up from the park. So that's one of the areas I'm going to chop up as well. So if you do have any questions or concerns, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, back to the phones we go. Let's head over and see what's going on with Carol. Hi, Carol.
Hi, Mike. I have a question. I'm going to be moving next month, and I have a little miniature rose bush out in my garden that I'd like to take with me, and it's blooming now amazingly. But I was wondering if I could dig that up now and put it in a pot and take it with me.
Yeah, I would go ahead and do that. The day before you start to dig it up, though, make sure that you really water the soil really well around it. But I've seen quite a few roses, not just the miniature roses, that are still blooming. So this is really kind of an amazing year.
It's kind of funny with the weather, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes, it is. So do you know where you're going to put it in the new location, in your new home?
Well, I'm moving to a retirement center, and I'll have a patio.
Okay. I would probably put it in, I don't know, since it's a miniature rose, I wouldn't put it in a pot that's any bigger than like an 8-inch pot. But what you could do for some extra protection is get a larger pot and then put some mulch around the, at the very bottom of that, then set the pot that has a rose in it down inside the larger pot, and then just put mulch all the way around it.
Oh, okay. And then the pot will be sitting in the mulch.
Exactly. So that would just offer a little bit of a, protection, because we just don't have any idea what the weather's going to do.
Well, and when I move in January, am I going to put the pot outside or inside?
I wouldn't leave it inside. I'd put it outside.
Oh, okay.
But just make sure that it doesn't get, overly dry while it's sitting outside either.
No, I keep watering it.
Right.
Okay, will do. I thank you, and I wish you a Merry Christmas.
Well, same to you. Merry Christmas.
Thank you.
And now let's go over to David's. Hi, David.
Hi, Mike. I have quite a few volunteer seedlings that have grown into red buds, and I'm wanting to transplant them into my farm that's up in Monroe County. So I'm wondering, I've got one that's 9 to 10 foot tall.
Oh, my goodness.
Most of them, yeah, it was a monster. Really likes where the sun location is in the front of the house, but I've got anywhere from about 15 inches to that giant monster. Do I take a chance now, or do I wait till February, March?
The big one I wouldn't even fool with, to be honest with you.
That's too big of a taproot.
Yeah, that's, you know, just the whole root ball and everything else are going to be overly gigantic and weigh a ton and everything else. And some of the smaller ones, you have some that are like a couple, you know, let's say 2 or 3 feet or less.
Yeah.
What you can do with those is you can actually, you don't have to get soil around them. Just water them really well. Do this in February and just work them up out of the soil. So in other words, you're going to do bare root.
That's what I thought.
And then you can put, you know, put them in a, like a plastic bag or something for just a short period of time until they can get, until you can get them planted. So a day or two before you're going to actually go and plant them, you know, dig them up and just bare root them as opposed to, you know, trying to dig soil with them.
All right, great. Thanks a lot.
Sure, my pleasure. Yeah, I mean, bare root is a lot of, you know, a lot of the production nurseries, a lot of retail nurseries and stuff do a lot of things with bare root plant material. When I used to work at Old Orchard Gardens, which was a retail nursery in West County, in February, we'd get bare root roses, we'd get bare root lots of things, and we'd pot them up ourselves. So it's just, I mean, that's something that really works pretty good. Now let's head over to Art Yard. Hi, Art.
Yeah, thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
Mike, on hosta and sedum, I have both that are maybe about 14 or 16 inches tall. How low can you cut them?
Is it an evergreen sedum?
Yeah, these are, yeah, green sedum, right.
Yeah, well, it's probably sedum live forever because usually the sedums don't get quite that tall. But
these are very succulent type of leaves on them, you know.
Right, and so the probably the leaves that are still functional are right at the ground level. So you can cut off all the old flower stalks and everything else from that. And with the hosta, you can cut them down to the virtually to the ground.
See. Okay, thanks a lot.
Sure.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you. And now let's head over to Ruth's yard. Hi, Ruth.
Hi, how are you?
Very good.
I have a butterfly bush. It's a compact Miss Molly. And I got it for Mother's Day this year. It's about 3 foot tall.
Uh-huh.
How far should I cut that down, or should I?
You should probably leave it alone. And that's, you know, the case with anything that's relatively new. Less than 2 years in the ground, leave all the branches, leave everything as you possibly can, because that's how the plant gets itself acclimated to the new location with having foliage. So if you reduce the amount of foliage, then the chances of it making energy to be able to get the root system established and grow better is going to be reduced. So don't cut it back at all.
So and the dead blooms that are still on it, I should leave them alone also?
Well, you can cut the blooms off. That's an aesthetic thing. But cutting the, you know, just cut where the flowers, you know, right below where the flowers were, and leave everything else alone.
Okay. Thanks for the advice.
Sure. My pleasure. And
bye-bye.
If anybody, we've got a, you know, little time left. So if anybody has a question, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. As you all know that I, you know, I grow all my spring flowering bulbs in pots. And so what I've got is I've got buckets of water, and even though it's rained and everything else, I'm going to take these buckets of water and I'm going to, you know, water all these pots. So I've got them in several different locations. And if you do try to grow, you know, plants in pots, you know, whether they're perennials or whether they're bulbs or anything else, make sure you don't put the pots underneath an eave or something along that line, because you want to have the rain, you know, hit wherever the pots are. And if they're underneath the eave of your house, the chances of it, you know, not getting rainwater is going to be really bad. And no fertilizers needed or anything else. So basically, I just try to, you know, keep the soil. Every few weeks, I just go out and water them. And that's about all I, you know, all I need to do. And it looks like we're getting quite a few phone calls. And so let's see. Oh, let's head over to Mike's yard. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Mike, enjoy your program. Did you say if I plant a cypress tree near a sewer line, it'd probably find the sewer line and clog it up, the roots?
Well, bald cypress, I mean, they, you know, do a lot of lateral growth, but generally, I mean, they don't, the root system don't search out for, you know, let's say a source for water. They just happen to grow, and if they run into the, you know, into the pipeline, then they'll, you know, have a tendency, depending upon what type of pipeline it is, you know, to grow and cause problems for it. But so I would not plant one right over or within, you know, several feet of a, you know, any kind of line that's going to have any kind of moisture related to it or any kind of pipeline at all.
What about 10 or 15 feet away?
You should be okay, you know, with that far away.
Thank you.
Sure. Yeah, and the bald cypress trees have a deep tap root, but a lateral root growth is going to be extensive. So realize as a tree matures that you're not going to be able to grow too much plant material underneath it because there's not going to be much soil. All right. Thanks, Mike. And let's head over to Carol's now. Hi, Carol.
Mike, how are you doing? I have a Mexican petunia that I know is an annual in our part, but in other places it's a perennial. So I thought, well, what the heck, I'd bring it in this year.
Mm-hmm.
And I have it in, and it's probably almost 6 feet tall, and it has hundreds of what could be blossoms if it had more sun. Should I cut those off so it's not taking too much energy working on those little buds?
Yes, because, I mean... Okay. Even, you know, plants are really healthy in the ideal circumstance, which this is not. Flowering is very stressful for any kind of plant. And so when they're in this situation that's not the ideal one, yeah, get rid of anything at all that could be, you know, a stressful factor.
Okay, because, I mean, it looks really pretty otherwise. And I thought, well, I will just take a chance and see if I can keep it over the winter.
Right.
So I appreciate your help. Thanks so much. Have a Merry Christmas.
Sure. Same to you. And now, Donna, could you do it kind of quick?
I can. Good morning, Mike. I have a question about hyacinths. I bought some that were in bloom in pots, so I let them dry out, and I just left them in the pot and stuck them in the ground in the pot, kind of covered them up with leaves and mulch. What do you think my chances that they'll come back next year?
Probably pretty good. I mean, are these grape hyacinths, or are they the regular size hyacinths?
Regular size hyacinths.
Yeah, I mean, they should be able to, you know, recover from that. That shouldn't be
woo-hoo.
A problem.
All right. Thank you, Mike.
Sure, my pleasure.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you. And sorry, Ann, Chris, and Laura, I don't think we're going to get a chance to have you on the air today, but we will be back next week, we hope. But anyway, I want to wish everybody a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year and Hanukkah and everything else that's going on this time of year. This, you know, and certainly say hello to winter, which we haven't really experienced too much winter. We've had some cold temperatures, but winter starts on Tuesday, and the days are getting so short. I mean, basically, Tuesday is the shortest daylight day of the year, and they'll start increasing a couple minutes every day. But boy, it seems like when it's cloudy like this and the sun starts going down, we can't even see the sun when it's cloudy like this. It just starts getting dark, dark, darker and darker. But this is the time of year. Say hello to everybody. Be friendly, be nice, and just enjoy the holiday season, because it is really once a year type thing. And I want to appreciate everybody that has done some holiday decorations on the outside. There's been some really fantastic ones. The one I'm concerned about, though, is Santa Claus is always out, but I guess Mrs. Claus is back at home. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline.